Many people have written to me, asking if the space people cannot give us information which would enable us to heal some of the most prevalent and cruel diseases being suffered by Earth's humanity. This subject has been discussed on a number of occasions. The human body, as we all know, is the most perfect machine ever created. It works, when allowed to do so, in perfect balance and harmony. No organ or part of the body takes an attitude that it is better than all other parts, or that it is being worked more than the others. Each performs its duty freely and happily, so long as the mind of the individual permits such cooperation. The only exception is a deformity of some kind, which in many instances can be traced back to ignorance on the part of parents during prenatal development. Even then, the well-developed portions take on an extra responsibility in an effort to establish harmony and to rebuild the body into the perfect pattern set for it in the beginning. Our scientists know this. They are learning the tremendous effect the mind has on the body and its functions. Yet people seldom realize how their tensions, their worries and emotions of all kinds affect their health. Our present social system has created conditions which build barriers for us to hurdle as we endeavor to fulfill demands made upon us. The patterns were set up long ago, but have become intensified during the years. Today people are dropping over from heart attacks and suffering from malignant diseases of several types. Respiratory diseases are on the increase, sometimes differing in symptoms and intensity of reactions. People are wearing glasses more than ever before, because of eye strains of many varieties. Few people ever really take time to relax. In fact, I doubt that many people even know how to relax, not only the body but also the mind, for the conditions in the body are but reflections of mental tenseness. Our present state is not the result of today or yesterday alone, but the accumulation of patterns started years ago and multiplied by each individual thought and act through this time, until the patterns thus established affect not only humans but all forms on our Earth. Some of the space visitors who have no natural tensions in their way of life are affected by earthly conditions, even by our atmosphere which we have so polluted during the past 15 or 20 years. Health is an individual problem. One cannot keep burning the candle at both ends, with the brakes of tension applied most of the time, and hope to keep well. Many people have gone on like this for years, achieving a certain amount of what was considered success, only to be struck down and bedridden for weeks, months, or even years. Some have been wise enough to recognize their trouble and have learned to take things easy, without worry or resentment of any kind. These often have recovered and lived long years, enjoying whatever the moment brought. I have myself known some such people who, while confined and forced to rest, learned to control their tempers, became aware of advance indications they were overstressing and building a tension and have thus been able to relax before another breakdown. It would not be necessary to experience such conditions if we would only begin to study ourselves, watch our thoughts and their effects upon ourselves and those around us, and then take time and make the effort toward relaxation. If only we would do this, we would find that in an amazingly short time, many things would change for the one who had made such an effort. If all of the people of the world would do so, there would be worldwide changes beyond anyone's expectation. Some will be able to master the art of relaxation much more quickly than others. For all it will mean patience and persistence. But the rewards will be gratifying to any who will make the effort. A warning, however. One cannot achieve relaxation through a strong determination that serves more to tighten than to loosen. True relaxation is found through happiness. Happy thoughts are powerful, for happiness frees. These are the reasons given by our interplanetary visitors for being unable to help us in our health problems more than they have. Yet they have continuously sent us thoughts of happiness, free of all condemnation. Again, I must repeat that they look upon us as younger brothers whom they love dearly, but whom they know must solve their own problems in order to learn the lessons well. When we have learned to relax mentally, we will also become more receptive to their thoughts of help. A tense mind is incapable of receptivity to much of anything but its own thoughts. As Ruskin said, "Make yourself nests of pleasant thoughts. If you do, you will find the way made easier." Do as the space people do. Release your own mistakes. Everyone makes them. Learn the lessons they have for you so that you do not repeat them, but let them go. Another important factor in the health of our neighbors on other planets is their custom of regular exercise to keep the body supple. They look upon their bodies as beautiful temples of divine creation which should be cared for with love and faithfulness. Dancing, swimming, sports of all kinds are indulged in with happiness, for sheer pleasure. They enjoy rhythm and strive to keep their bodies expressing their natural rhythm, thus maintaining a healthful state. They never make exercise a labor, for that would create tensions. Happiness and joyous expression alone can accomplish relaxation through exercise. L have never been on another planet, not even on our moon. All I can tell is what has been given to me by those of other planets who have honored me with their visits. Through the years I have grown in understanding their concept of the Creator as expressed through all forms, and man as an eternal manifestation. It is through this realization that they have grown in their ability to forget the past and live for the present. They have conscious perception which does not permit them to sit among any group of people without a thought of blessing. For, although the forms may be what we have named human, those of higher understanding see them not merely as people, but as the divine intelligence in a living state with which they can find no fault. People on Venus live hundreds of years in a single lifespan, then go through the experience we have named death. To them it is but a moving out of one house that has served them well into another new house. The minerals of the body, having originated from their planet, are returned once again to the planet. Rather than mourning for the loss of a loved one, as is the custom on Earth, people on Venus rejoice in their loved one's opportunity to express through a new home somewhere in Diphadia's house of many mansions. Since there is no feeling of possession of one for another, there is no suffering due to separation, for the true love as understood by them knows no separation of any kind. To say that I have grown to the place where I live as they do would not be true. But since man is eternal, each successful effort takes me a step further along the path of progress. It requires constant effort, with eternity in which to succeed. The wise man knows that only as he learns to live moment by moment will progress be his, for it is always the present. The past is gone and cannot be changed regardless how one might like to change it. The future can never be reached, not even the coming moment. When it arrives, it is the present. These are the lessons Earth's inhabitants are to learn. No one can do it for them, any more than one man can eat for another and both reap benefits. Growth and progress are individual matters. The way may be pointed, but each must travel it for himself. He may choose to travel the main highway, meeting and mastering the lessons brought by each moment, or he may choose detours. The choice lies with each one alone. Nothing that the space travelers have told us is new. Their wisdom has been with us for centuries. In the past we have chosen to ignore it, giving excuses of one kind or another. They are but reminding us and in simple, understandable language, again showing us the way of a life of peace and happiness which is the Father's will for all of His children, wherever they may be throughout the vastness of infinity in His house of many mansions. A life of eternal blend, without divisions, as is expressed throughout nature in all of her phases. Once we accept nature as our teacher, many mysteries will be revealed to us in all of their simplicity. As to which planets the space people consider higher or lower, they make no such distinctions. Each is a classroom of the cosmos in which specific lessons can be learned better than elsewhere. Yet all lessons are important in a complete life. It is only on Earth that we make divisions of higher or lower, better or worse. Mars, as I understand, is highly developed in science and manufacturing. But there, as on Venus, there is no bondage. When we depict Saturn with the symbol of scales, we are correct, for she is the planet of balance in many ways. In relation to the system, she serves as a balance between the planets, the Sun, and the asteroid belts. Venus, of course, is the planet on which lessons in love and compassion predominate, to be used as the foundation upon which all human attitudes and acts are based. I was not given specific information regarding other planets, but if we of Earth can learn to live a little more like the Venusians in their feelings toward one another, grow scientifically for the welfare of all, as the Martians, and gain more balance between play and relaxation and work as the Saturnians, we will find ourselves very well occupied. If we can or will make such endeavors, the history of our world will take a turn and we will in time be eligible to take our place in the household of our system. 10. The Bible and the UFO. All references are to the King James Version. Many people who have read my first two books, Flying Saucers Have Landed and Inside the Spaceships, have written to ask why, if people are living on other planets, are they not mentioned in the scriptures? I have conducted quite a bit of research into this subject, as the space people have told me many times of their visitations in biblical times. As a student of philosophy and science for many years, I have taught that the other planets were inhabited. This was long before I had seen a flying saucer or had had the pleasure of personal contacts with their occupants. My meetings with these people should not be considered such an unusual thing, as many others have experienced the same type of contacts. I am not referring to the many claiming psychic contacts. The people I am referring to have not publicized their experiences. These other contacts are known to various governments of the world, and due to the ridiculous light in which the sources find themselves at present, their identities are being kept quiet. In the meantime, they are studying and preparing for the day when they will be unveiled to the world. They will begin teaching the knowledge they have acquired to the masses, who will suddenly awake and find that they have been following the false ideas built up over the centuries and hidden by their own closed minds. Careful research of the Bible brings to light many reports of the visitors. In fact, a minister told me that he had found over 350 such references. Not only our Bible but other great records mention the coming of the visitors. Most of the people who wrote asking why they were not mentioned were simply uninformed as to the actual records. It is with this idea in mind that I will attempt to show how the visitors from space are mentioned in the Bible and that it was common practice for space people to offer guidance to the peoples of the world in ancient times, just as they are attempting to do now. One of the first verses brought to mind at this time is found in Hebrews 1-2. God hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds. This is a definite reference to more than one world. A similar concept is shown in Hebrews 11-3. Through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. Here again we find another reference to more than one world. Nothing was said about these worlds being inhabited, but it is proof that other worlds were known in biblical times. These people in biblical times were aware that the worlds were made of things that do not appear. These worlds came out of the invisible into the visible, or from cause to effect. This idea coincides with the most advanced conceptions of today in regard to the origin of the solar systems. In the Gospel of St. John 14-2 we read, "In my Father's house are many mansions, if it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you." This shows clearly that if we evolve enough, we can go to another world and live just as he stated he was going to do. This is shown in the next verse, John 14-3. "And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again, and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also." It is illogical to believe that Christ was the only inhabitant of his world. His planet must have had millions of happy people who were considered angels when they periodically traveled to Earth. It is taught that Jesus was taken up bodily into heaven, and this alone is proof that somewhere out there exists a planet capable of supporting life. Christ himself gave ample evidence that he came from another world. In St. John 8:23 we find, "And he said unto them, Ye are from beneath, I am from above, ye are of this world, I am not of this world." This shows we are of this world and are born from it. He was born of this world but was not from it. He came here from another. This is one of the better references referring to a being on a higher planet volunteering to be born here on Earth. This for the express purpose of guiding and helping those who are still climbing the ladder of spiritual evolution. We are taught in the Bible that we can become like Christ and even do greater things than he. We are taught that he was the firstborn of many brethren and that someday many of us can attain equal status with Christ. Rom, 8:29. This is in full accord with the statements of the space visitors where they said the Earth was like the first grade of a grade school. As we progress higher and higher, we move up through the planets as one, going from the first to second and third grades and so on. We climb from grade to grade and from planet to planet. At times there are those who desire to return to Earth to help those who are still climbing here. This is much like our sending missionaries to some foreign country. Some would choose to be born here as Jesus was. Others choose to come here in ships and live here as one of us. Many hundreds are doing that today. The Bible has other direct evidence that other worlds are inhabited. Genesis 6:2 and 6:4 describes sons of God who came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. These sons of God were evidently enough like human men of earth to give children to the earth woman of that time. They were flesh and blood like ourselves. I am sure that no one would claim that spirits or spirit angels came down and had relations with these women. They must have been as human as you or I. This is definite proof that other planets are inhabited and have been for a long time. The biblical description of angels is very clear. They look exactly like men of earth. They are just like us, except that they didn't participate in the fall of man. Positive proof of their looks is given in the Epistle to the Hebrews, where we find we can entertain them without being aware they are angels. Heb 13:2. We have heard much about spacemen and women being on earth. This seems fantastic and laughable to many because of what they have been taught from childhood. But if some have entertained strangers and didn't know they were angels, then who is to say that these men and women are not among us now as they were in olden times? You yourself may have entertained them or met them on the streets, as many have, including myself. Many people are aware of the identity of these visitors, many are not. If we believe that history repeats itself, then why not biblical history as well? How many times have the flying saucers been reported leaving the mother ship, scouting over the earth and then returning to the ship? A perfect description of this type of activity is found in Isaiah 60:8. Who are these that fly as a cloud, and as the doves to their windows? Does this not sound like flying saucers being gathered in by a mother ship? Phraseology in those days was different from today, and 500 years from now it will be different again, but there is always a basic principle by which we can identify similar happenings. The first chapter of Ezekiel is an amazing story of phenomena that follows the usual UFO reports too exactly to be mere coincidence. In the fourth verse we find a machine described as like a whirlwind coming out of the north with a great amber cloud of fire around it. Inside were four living creatures who looked like men. Ezek 1:5. At this point I would like to comment upon an odd characteristic of these ancient writings. In the original manuscripts, no punctuation was used and no separations were placed between words and sentences. Furthermore, no divisions into verses or chapters appeared. All this was added later by the revisers and translators. Scholars have commented upon the fact that Ezekiel had a habit of jumping about in his writings. This makes it hard to separate the descriptions of the living beings and the ships. In many cases a verse describing the men is followed by one referring to the ship and the very next verse refers to the men again. With this in mind let us go on. Verse 5 just stated that creatures looking like men were inside the ship which was glowing very brightly. Verse 6 says everyone had four faces and everyone had four wings. Obviously if the beings had four faces and four wings they wouldn't look like men. Verse 6 does not describe the men but rather the ships themselves. This is made plain in other translations of the Bible. Some of these even described our ships as discs. The ancient writers of that day had no words to describe directions as we do. For example, they referred to north, south, east, and west, as the four corners of the world. In verse 6 the ships are described as being round and facing in all directions by the use of the terms everyone had four faces and four wings, or, in other words, faced in four directions at the same time. To add to the difficulty of understanding these verses, the next verse jumps back to a description of the men. We find they had straight feet like us but were wearing strange shoes made of calf hide that was brass colored and were obviously some type of sandal or moccasin. Verse 8 makes it clear that they were guided by the hands of men or had men as pilots. In verse 9 is described the characteristic of modern-day sources. They turned not when they went, they everyone went straight forward. The ancient writer describes the character of the men and the determination showing in their faces by saying they have the strength of a lion, the steadfastness of an ox and the agility of an eagle. Obviously these beings could not look like men if they looked like animals. The writer of this description used symbolism just as we might in saying someone has a bulldog jaw or a Roman nose. Verse 12 makes it obvious that the faces in verse 11 were part of the ship itself and not faces of the men. So we see that the term face is used in referring both to the ship and to the men. Most of the confusion probably arose in translation as the translators themselves were trying to interpret something of which they were in complete ignorance. No doubt if we could have understood the language and read it as it was originally meant to be, we would understand exactly what the writer tried to convey and the confusion in terms would have been avoided. These flying machines landed, and what then transpired is related in verses 15 through 28. Addressed the machines were the color of beryl. All four were made alike and were constructed as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. Verse 17 again asserts they were round and changed directions without turning. Verse 18 describes the hiring around the dome and even goes so far as to describe four portals. These verses are a very accurate description of a three-ball landing gear type of saucer as seen through the eyes of Ezekiel. Under the flange of the scout-type craft are three revolving gears of metal as reported many times before. Not only do they give gyroscopic stabilization but they serve as generators of the tremendous electrostatic charge that is built up and stored in the Van de Graaff accumulators that are inside the three-ball landing gear. An observer of these wheels within a wheel would describe them exactly as Ezekiel did. Verses 19 and 20 make it very plain that the men rode inside the ships and had full control over their movements at all times. The rest of the chapter describes the contact and when Ezekiel heard a man speak to him out of the ship he fell on his face and attributed the strange machine and happenings to angels and God. Ezekiel was in awe of the many changing colors of the craft's force field and describes them fully in verses 22 through 28. His reaction was very much like the reaction of so many today. When he stumbled across something he didn't understand, he attributed it to God or the unknown and failed to realize that he was only contacting other human beings from another world. Jeremiah the prophet referred to flying chariots appearing as clouds. John 4:13. Many times since the advent of flying saucers, people have reported seeing in the daytime what appeared to be a cloud. Suddenly, from inside the cloud, a saucer would dart out and the cloud would slowly evaporate and disappear. This phenomena is caused by the force field of the craft itself. It causes the air to condense and form a cloud. This cloud has frequently been observed either around the ship or just above it. The children of Israel were led at night by a pillar of fire and by day with a cloud. Exodus 13:21. When they were pursued by the Egyptians, it is recorded that this cloud and pillar of fire troubled the pursuers as they were unfamiliar with such phenomena. Notice the word Lord used in Exodus, chapters 13 and 14. I would like to make it clear that ever since we can remember, man has been taught by various religious groups that the earth was the only inhabited place where man dwelled. Everything above the earth, or the sky, was the dwelling place of gods, angels and lords. Anything these people observed coming to earth from above, since they had no such means of travel themselves, was either gods, angels, or lords. A good example of not only a contact but a ride also is recorded in the second book of Kings. And it came to pass, as they still went on, and talked, that, behold, there appeared a chariot of fire, and horses of fire, and parted them both asunder, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. 2 Kings 2:11. First the fiery chariot was seen. Most saucer reports describe the ship as surrounded by an orange or amber fireball effect, and the tremendous power is symbolized by horses of fire. When it came close it could be felt as the wind of a whirlwind. Elijah was considered to be a man of God, and perhaps he was a spaceman who, upon finding his work finished in that locality, decided to leave and go to others. He was aware that he would be taken up and had promised his cloak of authority to Elisha when he left. So this event did not take him by surprise. At any event, it was men like himself that took Elijah up from the earth and took him to another point on it. He didn't go away from the earth at that time, for we find that a few years later, 2 Chron. 21:12, Elijah, writing from another area, condemned Jehoram for departing from the teachings of his father and for slaying all his relatives who might jeopardize his throne. Scholars agree that this was over 10 years, at least, from the time Elijah had been caught up. Elijah was returned to earth at another place to teach these other people what he had learned. This could be the answer to some of our present-day disappearances that so many have wondered about. Perhaps some of these people were visitors living among us who decided to go back to their own planet and simply disappeared from our midst by way of spaceships sent to gather them. Moses frequently conversed with beings speaking out of a ball of fire or out of a glowing cloud. Exodus 33:9. Many times a spaceman in a spaceship came down in front of the tabernacle and talked to Moses. The following verse shows that all the people witnessed this event. A similar event is recorded in Psalm 99, where we find he spoke unto them in the cloudy pillar. They kept his testimonies, and the ordinance that he gave them. Ps. 99:7. Notice throughout the Bible that when earthmen have gotten too far out of line, these messengers, or spacemen in their spaceships, have come down and talked to the leaders or to some of the community. Each time they would give them some of the universal laws and try to guide them in correcting their ways. Notice that they only informed them how to overcome their difficulties. The people had to accept and change their own ways. If they refused and brought trouble upon themselves, they could blame no one else for what happened. In Luke, chapter 9. Verses 34 and 35, we find an account of a ship in a cloud and a voice coming out of the cloud. The disciples were afraid when the ship approached, just as many people today are afraid when a similar incident occurs. The fact that a voice came from the ship is further proof of instructions given by space people to the people of Earth. Acts 1:9 is an account of Christ's ascension. This was after the resurrection, and Christ had appeared in his physical body over a period of 40 days. We have always been taught that he ascended in his physical body. When he entered the spaceship, the cloud received him out of their sight. The next two verses show there were witnesses to the event. Also, there is the promise that this same Jesus will return in like manner from heaven, or the sky. This covers this aspect pretty well, although there are many more references to this particular point. We will now try to clarify the statement by Orthon in Inside the Spaceships, pages 237 and 238. I call your attention to a record contained within your own holy writ. If you study it carefully, you will notice that the span of life on Earth began to decrease when die cloudy formation lessened and men for the first time saw the stars out in space. This refers to what we now call firmament. Now I will confirm his statement, proving they know more about the Bible than we do. Genesis 9:29 shows that Noah lived 950 years. The first biblical account of man seeing the stars is found in Genesis 15:5, where Abraham, is told to look to the heavens and count the stars. We are not sure just when the perpetual clouds ceased to cover the earth. We know most of the moisture contained in these clouds fell as rain during the flood of Noah. After the flood, the skies gradually cleared, and sometime in between the time of Noah and Abraham, stars were seen for the first time. When the cloud cover disappeared, the deadly cosmic rays spread upon the earth and man's lifespan decreased very rapidly. Abraham died at the age of 175 years. Gen. 25:7-8. In tracing the family tree from Noah to Abraham, we find 11 generations. During these generations, the lifespan dropped from Noah's 950 years to Abraham's 175 years, and since then to an average of 65 years. It is amazing that the space people are able to recall those days and tell us what is happening and why, as they have in flying saucers have landed and inside the spaceships. My first two books carried the full story of what is really taking place. One of my correspondents, who is a biblical student, sent me the following information which may be of some help to the public in general. I have not personally checked this, however,